Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. Our practice is of mindfulness, awareness, meditation. I always like to talk about just beginning the very ordinary things, and then understanding the more complex and how to be free from suffering. And the most ordinary thing is just sense experience, is sound, bodily contact. These are very simple things, and part of our training, a great part of our training, is learn to be with just the simplicity of touch, of taste, of sound, and try to bring our attention to that in a way we're not in a way where we have no real agenda of getting anything from the experience. So if we just feel the weight of our thighs and the weight of our body on the cushion and learn to attend to that without desire, without an agenda, what we should start to notice is that in that there's really no self-making, no I-making, no mind-making. And that's not something you look for with desire. It's something more simple, where just by attending to a sense base, with no agenda, then the thinking mind doesn't engage the situation, and the sense of self isn't being created. And this we're required or asked to do all the time: walking to the workshop, opening the handle of a door, feeling heat. These are very simple things. So this is extraordinarily simple, but the complexity of our thinking minds and the momentum of our desire patterns takes us into past and future and all the rest of it. So that one needs to intend to do that, just to intend to be present to some very obvious, coarse physical object is very, very helpful, very helpful. Just in eating, just intending to the texture of food or to the feeling of the spoon in your hand is not, it's not a matter of control, like you're trying to force yourself, but we're grounding ourselves in the ordinary, just in the ordinary. And what we're trying to notice, that also that's not something you become, it's not something you get in a future kind of experience, future possibility, but something, it's a kind of remembering of this moment. And if there is no sense of trying to get something out of this moment, then you'll see that the sense of a person isn't there, it's just pure experience. Trouble is, we're so conditioned, or say the sensualist or the hedonist or the materialist is always conditioned to very often look at sense experience with an agenda of desire to get something out of the experience. So that's not wrong. I remember this is what came to me, a memory of a friend, a Ukrainian friend in Toronto, who made his own pickles. And he once demonstrated how great his pickles were by totally indulging in a pickle in front of me. I was very impressed, actually, how happy he was with his pickle. It was kind of slobbering into the sink and so on, but he's very happy. That's the sensualist, isn't it? That's the hedonist who is kind of absorbing into sense experience for pleasure and then avoiding displeasure. There's nothing wrong with that. You go for a swim in the lake when you're hot. You choose to put sugar in your coffee, so that's not immoral. But to attend to simple physical objects without the agenda of desire is not, it's simple to say, but oftentimes in our meditation practice, we're attending to the object with the desire to get peace or to get rid of something, whatever, but actually just the simplicity of touching, hearing, and using that as a basis for grounding yourself. This should be doing all the time, all the time. And we need to be reminded of that. So there's a difference between rushing to the workshop to get a hammer and moving to the workshop quickly with a sense of bodily awareness. This is what it feels like to be moving through space. Same, can take the same amount of time, but the attitude is different. And the intention needs to be made to do that. Constantly. So some of the phenomena that we experience are very easy to experience. Touch, heat, sound, simple, because they don't have the hook of pleasant or unpleasant, and they're neutral. So we try to train in those things. But when the hook of Vedana, pleasant and unpleasant, arises in the experience, then of course it's more difficult to pay attention in this way with no agenda. So if, let's say, you could be sitting here and you'd be quite attentive to sound, very simple, just listen to sound. And your mind could be quite peaceful. If you listen, if you're thinking about something else, then it's going to be there, but... And then you find that that's really, yeah, that works nicely. And then one day maybe we get a guest who has a burping issue. And the guest sits down and they burp every 5 minutes. Now it's the same thing, it's just a sound, but now the sound might have a hook in it. You don't like burping. Socially you find it offensive, or it keeps interrupting your sense of what sound should be. And so there's a negative reaction. And maybe the person burps every 5 minutes. And at the end of the sitting, you're so annoyed and irritated at the person, or anticipating the burping. And that's all built up in the mind, isn't it? That's something that's created. Burp itself is as it is. Person is as it is. And that creation of stuff that we do is obviously where our suffering manifests, where we get into trouble. So then the practice becomes more kind of acute, in the sense that now not only is there a sound, but now the sound has this trigger called unpleasant. And you don't want. And then the attention, you see, has to be very, very sharp on the unpleasant nature of the experience. If not, experience jumps into, what does it jump into? It jumps into a sense of self. It jumps into personality. It jumps into sakkaya ditti. Why don't they just go sit in the other room? Who was their mother anyway? And how could they act like that, or something like that? And so the unpleasant, right? The unpleasant becomes the trigger and the vehicle for craving, in a sense of self. And that can be known. You can know that. That's created. It's being created through thought. Whereas the sound itself is just natural. Sure, it's being created by the person, but it's just a sound. It's not something that's created from desire for a sense of self. And so we use that. We use the very sense of unpleasant to see how a sense of self can be created, how it comes into the mind, how in itself it's an object, and rather than be the subject. And this is what we call sakkaya ditti, the first fetter, that creation through thought, through contact, pleasant or unpleasant craving and attachment, that structure, how that gets triggered. So what we can do, what can we do with that? Well, you can, you use that, don't you? You use that to just see, well, what is it? What is it about the mind that creates a sense of self? So there's a kind of self-inquiry. But it's not narcissistic. It's not about me and my problem. It's just seeing cause and effect and how it works. And then you can do things like if you're really getting annoyed at this person. I mean, it's a ridiculous example, but one has to use examples. You get really annoyed at this person, then you can do really concrete things, like you can squeeze your hands. You can do that, can't you? Just squeeze your hands. Let's say you're getting annoyed at someone, and that what happens is the annoyance is haunting, and your attention keeps being drawn into the annoyance. And then there's the self-judgment that I shouldn't have the annoyance, and the whole thing gets caught up in sakkaya ditti, in personality. But now you've seen that pattern and so on, now you just do something very obvious. Let's say squeeze your hands. It's called white knuckle practice. But you actually do that. And to do that, what do you have to do? You have to have enough awareness to know that this is an object. If one is just lost in the analysis of the anger, or in really believing in the anger, then that whole confusion just is that it's a whole mass of suffering. But you notice that, you've been there, now you just do something simple like squeeze your hands. And just focus on something very coarse and rough. Squeezing hands is natural. It feels this way. That's a function of nature. And then you have a kind of contrast to the mind wanting to go to react to that. And you see the movement, you see the way the sense of self wants to be created, and just squeeze your hands. So now you have a kind of refuge in tactile sensation. Now if you squeeze your hands in order to get rid of anger, that's still desire. You want to get rid of desire, anger, that's not about it. It's just this, just like listening to sound. You don't have to deal with desire. You can do it neutral, can't you? So you can squeeze your hands just for the sake of squeezing your hands. But now you get something really interesting. You got this, and you have this habit of annoyance, and that burp comes up, and then you can feel the mind want to go with it. What do the hands feel like? So you move from that the haunting nature of that mental habit, emotional habit, to something more concrete. Because some of these habits that we have, we're too fascinated by them. We kind of have this perverse interest in them. So we analyze them and we judge ourselves, and then they get triggered by things. But actually we're just caught and involved with sakkaya ditti, the first fetter. We're just caught in it all the time, analyzing our fears and angers and desires, or judging them, or think we shouldn't have them, or kind of really distracting, maybe watching, eating a lot, or Netflix, or whatever. But this is very neutral, actually, just squeezing your hand, something like that. It could be anything, couldn't it? It could be, you put an ice cube on your wrist or something like that. But now you just take a coarse sense object and see the mind's interest in this mind's obsession with this, and say, well, that's a movement that can be known. That's an object. Then the person, you talk to them later, and then maybe you blow your cool and you tell them they shouldn't be burping. They tell you they've got esophageal cancer. And then you feel guilty. So then it gets more compounded. And you're sitting there and the burping's going, and you hate them, but you also feel guilty about hating them. And then you get caught in this tangle of self-analysis. It shouldn't be like that. Yeah, but they shouldn't. But then you just squeeze your hands. Something very, very simple. And I do believe our culture is so complicated with its self-analysis that it does become narcissistic. It's not about the objective movement of consciousness, of conscious object. It's about me and my problems and my fascinations and all of that. So it's not really coming from awareness of sakkaya ditti, it's coming from sakkaya ditti itself, the self-analysis. And that won't free you. That will not free you. That will just keep you going in the tangle of thought and doubt. Whereas to know something like, say, in this case, aversion as aversion, when the sound comes up, and not be fascinated by it, not pick up sakkaya ditti, is the beginning of the end. Right? Because now it's no longer being fueled through craving, through attachment to craving. Now these kind of, we, you know, as human beings, we have we have senses, we have the five senses, but we also have the mind sense, the mind, and the mind produces things which are very hard to be aware of in this same way we can be aware of a neutral sound. Being aware, say, of an unpleasant memory. An unpleasant memory has the same characteristic as a sound, but it might not be so neutral because it's unpleasant. And then if it's really loaded with resentments or regrets or guilt, then when that memory comes up, it's much more difficult not to, again, be engaged in this haunting way of attachment and Sakkaya Ditti, personality view. And then the stories can be so quick, can't they, just come out. So using very obvious tactile objects or sound objects as a constant monitoring of what's actually going on, and to see that the feeling of hardness is real. It's not something I'm creating. That sound is real. How I define it, I can define it as pleasant or unpleasant, but that's afterwards. But the sound itself is just the way it is. I'm not creating that. It's nature. That's Dharma, the nature of sound coming and going. And if I use that, then I begin to kind of what you might think of as a refuge in Dharma. It's just the reality of this moment. Is this way, awareness of the reality of this moment. And then the difficulty is applying that to things like memory, habit, emotional response, all the self-definitions that we have, all the shoulds and shouldn'ts culturally conditioned into us through parents or whatever, the shoulds of others and shoulds of others, the political views, the aesthetic views, all the nine yards of the human condition, all those seemingly real and concrete and important things. They're just movements of the citta, of the mind. They're not more than that. So then you have the challenge around like attachment to views, political views or aesthetic views or whatever. How it's okay to have views, but how does the sense of self arise with a viewpoint? Viewpoint is something that comes up from conditioning, through study, through whatever ways we get opinions. Some are well grounded in observation. Some are in rumors or whatever. But the opinions are just mental objects that come and go, and we need them. We need to have some kind of ideas about how we're going to function, which is okay, which is all right. But when does an opinion get loaded with Sakkaya Ditti? When does my judgment about something, or my preference for something, or my take on something become loaded with self-thinking, me and mind thinking, Sakkaya Ditti? And that would sort of stutter. And it can be very convincing. Internally and externally, it can be very, very convincing. So there's a difference between, having an opinion and then functioning from a place where that opinion is loaded with me and mine and you. So you have one opinion, I have another opinion, and I think about you, and I say, how could you have that opinion? How could you be so uneducated? I mean, that's just so foolish. Or I have an opinion, and then I found, how could I have such a silly opinion, whatever, but it's just an opinion. So what we're looking at a lot now is in the movement of the mind, is the creation of self, Sakkaya Ditti. This whole construct of personality which comes up through thought. And it's very powerful, very convincing, and very, very deluding. Not that individuality doesn't exist, not that some opinions are not more well-grounded in observation or whatever, but it's the Sakkaya Ditti in it. That becomes the problem. And so the kind of most direct teaching we get about that is, as most of you have read the Bahiya Sutta, which is this really very, very simple and direct way of practice that Buddha recommends to Bahiya. And so, just to remind you of that recommendation, And be here, you should train thus. In the seen, there should be just the seen. In the heard, just the heard. In the sense, just the sense. In the cognized, just the cognized. And when Bahia in the seen, there's just the seen. In the heard, there's just the heard. In the sense, just the sense. In the cognized, there's just the cognized. Then Bahia, and there are many translations of this, one of them is that you will not be in that. And when you will not be in that, there will be no you, no here, no there, nor in between. Just this is the end of ill. So there's many translations of that, as you've read. I'm sure it's very enigmatic. But think about the burper. George the burper comes in. And now you kind of know that he has esophageal cancer. And you kind of have a sense of openness, and then the burping comes up. And it's just sound. You can do that. Just sound. It's that way. Or then the previous episode, the night before, George the burper comes in and there's the unpleasant. There's the arising of craving from that. There's the attachment. There's the thought. How could he do that? Shouldn't be doing that. I got to tell him something. Yeah, but I have to tell him something. There's a you in that experience now. But in the heard, there's just the heard. Just sound. And then the draw of the unpleasant, but it's not attached to you through craving. And there's just the sound, and there's no you in that. There's still hearing, there's still individuality, there's still functioning, but there's no sense of a me and a him and all that suffering that we have from that. This is very direct, isn't it? Very, very direct. But our culture, I should think, and our culture is a kind of self-improvement culture. A lot of narcissism in our culture, a lot of kind of self-thinking, which is not really what Sakya Ditti is pointing to. So the reference we have is more dependent origination. That these things depend. The feeling of unpleasantness depends on conditions. The feeling of the craving arises from, it depended upon on the unpleasant or the pleasant. Depends. So it's that's the way we talk about this flow of consciousness. We don't, as in the way of the five khandhas, we talk about experience and dependent origination, not self. That's how we describe it. With this as condition, there's that. When there's this, that. When not, when this is not, that is not. And that's a way of finding that place of peace within the movement of pleasant and unpleasant, and the abandonment of craving within that. Whereas, I think what goes down is Buddhism sometimes is kind of trying to improve yourself to become a better person. That's all right, and that's a kind of good intention, but you can see how if the position one takes is that I shouldn't be angry, or you shouldn't be loud, that whole position is no longer grounded in right view. It's grounded in personality view, Sakya Ditti. But if this is seen as dependently originated, that the feeling of annoyance arises dependent on the sound, and that the craving and suffering that comes from that is dependent on attachment, and you understand what a non-attachment is, then it's not narcissistic. It's just flow of consciousness, what works and what doesn't work. It's no longer about me and my problems and my issues, and I shouldn't be like that. All of that is simply seen as thought. So the squeezing your hand is not narcissistic, unless you get off on it or something. But it's just kind of ordinary thing, isn't it? It's not like self-regard and self-concern and so on. So to improve yourself, fine. If you want to be a great orator, be a great orator. If you want to make furniture. If you want to be a good scholar, be a good scholar. That's all good. It's all very, very good. But the freeing of the mind, it's not the same kind of project. It's not the same kind of project. It's more the awakening to Dharma, to nature, to the nature of things. And this idea of refuge is very, very, very central to that. To that liberation again, it's just when you notice, like, just the sound of the fan in this room, and you're awake to that movement, and you know that's real. Or I'm awake to Pavaro moving to my right now. That's sound, right? That's just real. There's nothing good, bad, or indifferent on it. I might create something around that. He might be embarrassed now by that. But that's what he's creating, right? Self-consciousness. Hope you're not. There's a sound, there's just movement. And then a sense of self gets created from these very, very ordinary things. So taking refuge then, like just take refuge in sound. But in hearing rather than the quality of a sound. If you take refuge in the quality of sound, you're done. You're toast. Because sound changes from pleasant to unpleasant to neutral. But just take refuge in the heard, there is just heard. In the sense, there's just sense. Right? There's no agenda there. There's no demand that it be beautiful or ugly or whatever. It's just the way it is. It's that. And to do that is not so difficult, but what is difficulty, probably we don't make the intentions to do that. And we get taken up by the business of our lives, or the compelling scenarios of self that drive our thinking patterns, or we even pay attention with a desire to get enlightened. So you could take this in the scene. There should be just the scene. Just this is the end of ill. And then you try to do that to kind of put away your suffering, and there's desire there, desire not to suffer. So that doesn't have an agenda of desire. It's not about becoming; it's about being. In the cognized, just cognized, to kind of recognize that this is a memory. Say, that's all it is, and not go to the pattern habits of years of self-identity with a memory, say, or with a political viewpoint or an aesthetic viewpoint or whatever it is, to just see it's a viewpoint that arises and ceases. It's an aesthetic taste that arises and ceases, yeah? And then that's to see that as Dharma is harder. Because those things can be so loaded with self-view. So again, like I was saying, we begin with something just very ordinary, like the fan. It's very ordinary, neutral, and train with that. And that's why we say we use the breath. But even the breath, sometimes you train with the breath, there can be this subtle desire to control it. So there's a me doing the breath, trying to get something from that. So sometimes just hearing, touch, kind of more ordinary things are very good. But notice how the challenge is to actually sustain that kind of awareness. Mind falls asleep. You go off into all kinds of things. So sustaining attention on the urn is difficult because it's not interesting. It's not exciting. It's not like doing something challenging or dangerous. And that's what the craving mind likes. It likes interesting things and fascinating things and so on. But if we're always dependent on fascination and interest, what do we do with the rest of life, which maybe isn't fascinating, interesting? Well, we think. That's what we do. When it's not interesting, we just think. So going from A to B, rather than just noticing maybe the sound of the birds or the heat in the body, we think. And then we get there, and then we forget what we're supposed to get. And then we remember, and then we get it, and then we think again. So the neutral is the place of heedlessness, not the place of danger or excitement. The neutral is the place of heedlessness where the mind can just start thinking. And yet, because the neutral is not challenging in any kind of a emotional way, it can be a beautiful place to develop just really strong presence. So that's why we do intentions. So you start at the workshop, you intend actually to notice the walking from A to B. from the workshop to the office, or just getting up and bowing, making that an intention constantly, bowing carefully, and then the intention to, and then we get to all our, like our mindfulness trainings, is to put the tools away, to clean the tools and all of that. All that is very, very helpful, rather than to rush and get the job finished. Actually, to take care with a hammer, clean it off, and a paintbrush, just to care for cleaning our own spaces, like to take care of our kutis, to make our beds, to dust the cobwebs, to make sure the windows are clean. So Ajahn Chah would say that when you go back to your kuti, what does it look like? And if it's messy, he says, that's what your mind looks like. And that's simple. So this, in our kawat, it's the grounding into the ordinary. The grounding in the ordinary is of actually making your bed, of tidying things up, of sweeping the leaves off your porch, sweeping the leaves in your meditation path, putting stuff away, like in the sala, not leaving stuff lying around or in the hallway, putting your shoes neatly when you come in. All these little things are really quite beautiful trainings in the ordinary, and then if you do them really well, they constantly take you to the silence of no self. You constantly see the end of Sakaya Ditti just in that ordinary activity. And that builds over time. It just gets more and more clear. Alright, I'll leave that for your reflection.
Andamaya no vada tamma gataya sadhu karam dadama se
sadhu sadhu.